I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KrisAnneHall.com. Liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Well, this is our Saturday edition, our double dose of Constitution and truth and principle, not fake news, not political party agenda, not propaganda. And I have with me my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
It's like I caught him in the middle of
a yawn.
A yawn. We have just had the most amazing week. I just want to use that superlative today. The most amazing week teaching all week long at the River School of Government. And the Bible, the River Bible Institute here in Tampa, Florida. The students are amazing. It's like 200, isn't it? Or it's more like 300. I don't remember how many we have.
Not sure.
Somewhere between 200 and 300 students we have been teaching all week. Constitution, principles, American history. We've been showing them how they've had their history, their heritage stolen from them. And I'm not talking about African heritage. I'm not talking about Chinese heritage. I'm talking about American heritage
right.
Stolen from us. Yesterday I taught them, Thursday. Thursday I taught them about the forgotten mothers. Wednesday you taught them about a stolen American Black history, and that was an amazing. That was I've had students come up to me and tell me that was a life changing class.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You tell our people a little bit about that class, because I think that it's important. It's a class that we're going to be teaching at Liberty First University, very very shortly. It is a life changing class. And the audience, our listeners, need our Saturday listeners, because a lot of them are different than the Daily Journal listeners. They shouldn't be. If you are only listening to the Saturday show, you're missing out on a lot. Remember, we have the Daily Journal that runs Monday through Thursday in podcast form, and you can find that at chrisannhall.com. You can find that at Spotify. You can find that at iTunes and Google Music Play. It's on YouTube, Monday through Thursday, your daily dose of current events in the light of the Constitution and principle and absent of the political party agenda. So you taught them, give them the title of the course so they know how to find it at Liberty First University.
Yeah, so it's a course I hope to compile into a book so we can put it in people's hands as a tool. It's called More Than Victims, America's Black Heritage. And I took the inspiration from a book written by William Cooper Nell, who was Frederick Douglass's publisher for the North Star. He also published for Garrison's Liberator. But he had a book called The Colored Patriots of the American Revolution. And this book was previously used as a textbook, a standard textbook in the American education system. So
wow.
people learn this information. And it's
that's what they call the progressive agenda.
Yeah. So
progressively it put more and more lies in education, progressively steal the history, progressively change reality.
Exactly. And so in the presentation, I'm basically presenting the black founding fathers and mothers who helped make America great. And the history, basically there is, as probably everyone listening knows, the propaganda is essentially black Americans were nothing but slaves before the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, they don't, I think the people behind the agenda, they don't want the black community understanding that they played a role in this nation, but that they were victims.
You know what?
Simply victims, and you're oppressed. So the thing about it is, if you, you know, once black Americans are severed from their history, then they can be convinced that the founding of America is not their history. And so that makes them susceptible into this manipulation that we see of hating their own country and, you know, seeing themselves as only victims and oppressed.
I don't mean to interject here for just a second, but it just came to my mind the tour that we had when we took the youth group to Washington, D.C., and yeah. we went to the Capitol building.
So that was exactly what that tour guide was saying.
Yeah, the tour guide was saying that the White House was built by slaves and the Capitol right. building was built by slaves. That's the only contribution that black people yeah. have was so what they did at the end of a whip.
Right, and this is not to deny those facts, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not to deny that there was slavery, that there was oppression, that these things happened. The point is that history is taught. But the history, the examples of all these heroes and these prominent black Americans, patriot black Americans, is not taught. It's erased, okay? So because, you know, come at us like, oh, you're denying this other history.
Mm-hmm.
No, I could say the same thing about them. You're not teaching this history, so you're denying this history.
That's
right.
Right.
But
that's
I don't
right.
need to teach the slave history because that's taught everywhere. So I'm interjecting a history that's been stolen from black America. Because when you only give the one side and you make it look like no black American before 1863 did anything. You've stolen heroes from black America.
Right.
And again, that spills over into now, right? Because the whole purpose is to build that thought now. Like, you were a slave, therefore you are a slave, you're a victim. That I'm a victim mentality becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, and this is missing from the education of the children in the black community.
Let me remind you of something that you said. You had said to me when we were talking, something happens when you remove heroes.
Yeah.
Heroes who are who we strive to be. It's not just simply becoming defeated. You know, you will never have a void of heroes. You remove somebody's going to fill that place. So what are we doing?
Two things happen. And this is why I think this information is so empowering. I think it's key because this underpins the fueling of the progressive liberal Democrat party, right? We look around and I think the last I saw Democrats, black Americans vote Democrat 84%. So they're drawn
right.
even against their own principles, the things that they themselves believe in are contrary to what the Democrat party believes in. Nevertheless, they vote. Why? Because when you build this victim mentality, right? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, first mm-hmm. off. Secondly, when you talk about removing your heroes, removing this legacy where you're that makes you a victim, then somebody can swoop in and say, "Well, I'm your savior. I'm going to help you. I'm going to save you. I'm going to be the one," right? And that ends up being the Democrat Party. Right? You need us because you're a victim, and the system's keeping you down, and the white man's keeping you down, and all this stuff is against you. So if you'll just vote for us, we'll help you. We'll give you all these things. And then we know the Democrat Party does not do that. The only thing the Democrat Party is concerned with is being kept in power by taking the black vote. And so one of the things that underpins their ability to steal the black vote, I believe, is this information has been stolen from black America.
Right, right.
So so I believe if something like this is taught consistently in, let's say, black education, you know, this is passed on to the children and the people know this, then it rips out that foundation for the liberals to recruit so many in the black community and convince them, you know, we need to be your savior because you're
right.
a victim. Because
right.
if you get this if this information is you know, a standard part of what black America knows, then they know we are a part of America. This is our history. I'm not going to hate my own country because it's not this monochromatic history. And number two, I don't need you as a savior and, you know, to be my provider and this and that, because I'm empowered looking at my history and my legacy of powerful, influential people who contributed to America, who built America.
Amen.
In spite of slavery, in the context of this oppression, that didn't stop them.
Right.
And it's not going to stop me. And so, and that's what the students were telling us when we gave this presentation and got feedback from so many of the students, the black students. You know, that was the mindset they walked away with. Some of those guys that said, "Man, this is life changing." And we said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And this is exactly what they told us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, "Well, I know this history, so I know what I can be. I know what my community can be, because it's what we've been all along, but we've been convinced that we're nothing but victims."
Right.
And so we now play that role so that we can be manipulated and controlled. And the guy said, "I don't have to let that happen anymore."
Well, that is awesome. When we come back after the break, I'm going to tell you about some more of this, and then we'll get into the current events. Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. You have to know what you just heard is absolutely true. You have to recognize, you have to admit that we've been lying to our children for decades. We used to tell the truth. Now we lie. And I have to say we, because your money, our money, funds the public education system whose job at this point, based on their curriculum, is to lie. And that's just the truth. And I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, but when we teach the truth, like the class that I taught at the school, at the college here this week, about the history of the education system, what happens? What have you seen? I'm going to ask you your personal experience. What is your personal experience that happens to people in the audience when I teach this class publicly, the history of the American education system?
Yeah, so, it's usually pretty disturbing to most people. They're shocked. Again, just like I think that the classes, with three of those classes that we taught this week, they're shocked with how much they've been lied to.
How do the teachers respond?
Well, I've mentioned before that you first taught this thing in Gainesville, and there were several teachers, lifelong teachers, retired in the audience, and one went outside and and was throwing up.
And yeah.
Another lady was weeping uncontrollably. It come to me afterwards and said, she said, I can't believe I'm so ashamed of what I participated in for so many years and what we've done to these children. And so they're shocked, you know. It's just like I went through the education classes in college, coming out of, you know, basically being an instructor for the Navy for so long, and then coming out for the psychology degree, and initially had taken many of the education classes that they give to teachers. And you hear all these names, John Dewey and Wilhelm Wundt and
Thorndike,
Stanley Hall, and all these guys are heroes as they teach this.
Yeah.
And then in your presentation, you quote, and it's not like we're telling our opinion. It's just like anything else. And you're quoting them from their own journals and what they say about children, what they say about the purpose of education and what they're doing and what their goals are. And these guys are not heroes. They are some of the most wicked, devilish, evil people to ever exist. This guy, the father of modern American education system, it is disgusting and despicable how they viewed children, how they viewed their students.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and this is the thing. This is when we talk about knowledge as power and how it can have powerful change and transformation, and then when you put it into action, you know,
right?
To reveal, and again, just how you teach and we teach everything we teach from the words, from the mouth of the people, the mouths of the people we're talking about.
That's why we say truth, not fake, fact, not agenda.
Right, because. And that's the thing. You know, it's funny. I remember the guy who interviewed you, Washington Post or whoever it was, and you gave the presentation to him, and he listened, and he, it was like he got to the end and said, well, I really can't disagree with anything you're saying.
Right.
You know, it was just the fact that I don't like certain things. You know, mm-hmm. it was really disagreeing with the founders, not with you. I mean, and so that's the thing. What you when you take the Constitution and the whole notion is, it's because we don't follow the Constitution. It's because we don't understand and follow the principles of liberty.
Right.
Is at the root of all of this dysfunction in our government, in our economy, in the social realm, and all these things we do. That's at the heart of it. And so that how we present everything we present is not here's what JC thinks about it, and here's what Chris Ann thinks about it. No, it's here's who built this thing and said this thing. Listen to their words,
right,
and understand the principles from the people who basically boiled this stuff down and passed it on to us. You know?
And when I taught about the forgotten mothers, it became very, very apparent and obvious to everyone that the same thing that we've done to the heritage of Black America, we've done to the heritage of women in America, with the exact same goal, with the exact same purpose, to keep us enslaved, to keep us defeated, and to keep us obedient.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host, JC Hall. Remember, you can find the courses that we've been talking about at libertyfirstuniversity.com. You can find a good portion of what we're talking about on DVD at libertyfirstuniversity.com called the Forgotten Founders course. JC's course is more complete and goes beyond the revolution. with the Black Heritage. It's going to be such a powerful class. The Forgotten Founders class that I teach has some Black Americans, has a lot of women, and even some Hispanic influence from Spain, and it's just, we are a multiculturally comprised union of states, but that doesn't mean that we're not Americans, and I think that's right. The problem that we have here. Every other place on the planet, we were having a conversation with some people who were Cuban, and about you had gone to Cuba, and you were looking around at the people in Cuba, and they're Black, red, yellow, and white, and they all believe that they're Cubans.
Yeah. Well, I want to share something, a reaction from a group. There was a group of ladies that we were talking to after your presentation.
Please.
So this was after these.
Yeah, I don't
after
think I
had
heard
given
that.
Mine, and you had given the education, then you gave them the founding mothers. Because we kind of encounter this reaction sometimes where people dismiss you're just teaching history. What is mm-hmm. this is just history. What is
yeah.
the point?
Big you deal. Because we've been taught to hate history.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. That was the reaction. But you know, they say, "Oh, it's history," and we need to talk about policies and you know, there's these different things and programs that we can do, things that we actually need to do. You know, you have to have there has to be a drive to sustain, you know, conducting the right policies, implementing the right policies.
Right.
It can't just be just sort of this bland. Oh, here's a policy. I came up with a great idea. Oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it. The ladies came up and they said they were, there's always this, they're really moved, you know, all mm-hmm. the time. And they mm-hmm. said, man, I can't believe how much they made history so boring when I went through school, when I went through college. She said, it's like they want us to hate history.
Amen.
And she said, listening to this stuff this week, she said, this is not just history. This is life-changing, mm-hmm. empowering information. And that, to me, was the key word, empowering information. This makes you do something. It changes way you think. And so it leads to action.
That's the purpose of history.
Right.
That is the purpose of history. And that's what drives me crazy. The purpose of history is to make us better, to be lessons that we learn so that we're empowered. We're no longer enslaved by the same mechanisms of the past.
But we've been convinced that it's just dates, you know, and names. And so this is not really important stuff.
Yeah.
And so people really easily dismiss it. But they don't see what we see every time we're, you know, mm-hmm. after the people get hold of this information.
Right, right. Well, you know, there's so many ways that we need to be using this information. We need to be learning from this information. We need to be teaching this information so our children can be better people, and then when we learn it, then we can apply it.
Well, think about this. You come to the realization that the group you've been loyal to and serving has been lying to you,
mm-hmm.
has manipulated you for the purpose of maintaining their own power, and boom, you get that information. What do you think you're going to do? You're not going to say, oh, well, ho-hum, that's just history. Let me just go on about my life and continue what I'm doing, continue to be used, manipulated. No, that's not going to happen. So it is unfortunate how people mm-hmm. dismiss the importance of this information. No, this is life-changing. And this, to me, like I said, you put something like this in the hands, this is in every Black household.
Yeah.
I mean, this gets at the foundation of the system that is using them and manipulating
them. Which is precisely why it's not in the system.
Right.
is precisely why
exactly
we will even be demonized by teaching this at all, right? They'll be coming at you and saying, who are you to teach black history?
Well, that's why I have my family photo album as a slide when I go to teach this, because then they don't know how to handle me.
Right.
Here's
right.
this white guy from black heritage. What's going on? So they run out of criticisms and attacks to try to shut me up. Number one, they're not going to shut me up because I don't care what they say. It's not about me. It's about the information, right? So you can say what you want to say. And, oh, you shouldn't be teaching it. Well, too bad, I'm going to teach it. And then once the people get the information, you can go check this. You can verify this. Let me give you an example really quick, because I share this with the students. And I mentioned to them, these ought to be household names. And this is just a sampling.
Exactly.
This is just a sampling.
Here's the Chris Ann Hall show pop quiz for our listeners. Do you know these names?
Right. And particularly in the black community, these ought to be household names. Every American should know these names, but black Americans even more so.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a sampling. Crispus Attucks, Wentworth Cheswell, Seymour Burr, Jeremiah Jonah, James and Hosea Easton, Job Lewis, Jack Grobe, Boson Wright, Eleanor Eldridge, Phyllis Wheatley, Peter Salem, Kalo Stedman, Cuff Whitmore, Cato Wood, Prince Eastbrook, Caesar Ferris, Samuel Kraft, Lemuel Haynes, Pomp Blackman, George Vashon, James Lafayette, Pomp Fisk, Grant Coop, Charleston East, Titus Comer, Cuff Hayes, Charles Reason, Fanny Jackson Coppin, William Cooper Nell, Thomas Downing, George T. Downing, James McCure Smith, Frederick Douglass, Caesar Dickinson. And that's just an example. I say all that to give you an idea. Of how much, and this is all, listen, the whole point of the presentation, this is prior to 1863, before the Emancipation Proclamation. In here are business leaders, entrepreneurs, wealthy, influential property owners. How many people know 1770 America had a black mayor?
Right.
How many people know that? That doesn't
1770,
fit.
Yeah.
That does not fit.
It does not
the
fit.
The Democrat narrative. I promise you, I would be willing to say, other than academics and historians who actually study this, would study this individual specifically, I guarantee you there is less than a handful of black people in the entire United States who has any idea there was a black mayor in 1770. I promise you, you could search for the rest of this month, every day.
Mm-hmm.
You guys out there, listen. You ask every black person you run into. You're not going to find anybody who knows that.
Well, it's just stunning, and this is why we teach what we teach. This is why we do what we do. This is why we bring this information to you, that you can be educated, so that you can move on.
If you're a black American and you hear Boston Massacre, there should be, I mean, I think every American, number one, but
right.
black American, if I say the words Boston Massacre, boom, you should think a name right off the bat.
Crispus Attucks.
You should, that name should come, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
If I say Bunker Hill, right?
Yeah.
There, you know, several of these battles, Bunker Hill, Saratoga, there are black patriots that were the keys
to winning those battles. Yeah.
James Lafayette was a spy against Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold was known as one of the, has a military genius. He was actually a hero on the American patriot side until he turned to the British. It said he's the best officer on either side of the war. And he went to the British with all this information and was there with the general. But guess what? He didn't succeed. He failed. Do you know why? Because a black patriot was a spy that spied on Benedict Arnold and fed that information to the American patriots. Now, so when you hear Benedict Arnold, there should be a companion name to that anytime that name is mentioned.
James Lafayette.
But it's not.
Yeah.
So it's astounding how much has been erased. And I'm telling you, this information is incredibly empowering if they get hold of it.
And if we're totally honest, then we must admit that there is a lot of information that has been erased, not just simply cultural, but factual. Most people today have very little understanding of politics, have very little understanding of the Constitution, a very little understanding of the Bill of Rights. And there's a story that I want to share today that's sort of that wraps a lot of these things up into the same into one lesson. And I want to remind everybody that in March of 2016, actually March 1st, 2016, Donald Trump had a rally in Kentucky specifically, and this is a fact that is very, very pertinent to the story, specifically at the Kentucky International Convention Center. So Donald Trump, during March of 2016 would have been primary time, right?
Yeah.
So we're in the primaries. Donald Trump is having a rally at the Kentucky International Convention Center, which is a private convention center. And in that convention center, there are protesters. Now, we've been to conventions. We've taught at conventions. You got to pay to get into these things, right? Because they're being privately held and people are paying to get in, and people have to pay for the food. They have to pay for the venue. They have to pay for this, so they have to recoup that money. So it's privately held, privately owned, and it's a primary. Let's get this, because these are very, very relevant, controlling facts for us to understand the story. Primary held rally for Donald Trump. Now, at that rally, there were some protesters. And at that rally, these protesters tried to effectuate the heckler's veto, to shout and shut Donald Trump's speech down and interrupt and disrupt this private function. And when we get back, I'm going to tell you what happened just the other day because of that.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host JC Hall. And I wanna tell you that, remind you with the setup that we have here. We have a primary rally held in a private venue put on by individuals as a private function that you had to pay to get into. Now, during this particular rally, the protesters got loud, and while Donald Trump was speaking, they were trying to shut him down. And Donald Trump on the stage said, get those people out. Take them out. Remove them. Well, they were removed, and unfortunately, the people, however it worked, I'm not even going to classify it. It was a little bit aggressive. Things got aggressive. So were the protesters refusing to be removed, and they had to be forcibly removed, or was somebody a little bit more aggressive than they need to be? That's the question, but that's not for our situation right here.
Two people basically attacked the protesters.
Right. So what we have then is a situation where the protesters were attacked. They felt attacked. They were attacked. But then they charged, they filed a case against Donald Trump. Three of the protesters filed a lawsuit against not the people who assaulted them, but against Donald Trump for, quote, inciting a riot. And just last week, by a vote of 3-0, the week before last, by a vote to 3-0, a 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said the protesters did not state a valid claim under Kentucky law against Trump or his campaign, and that Trump's speech was protected by the First Amendment because he did not specifically advocate for violence. And this is something that, I've been teaching for a very long time. If you're going to charge someone with inciting a riot, the conditions, the elements are very, very strict. Donald Trump would have to look out there and say, beat those people.
Yeah.
But he didn't. He said, remove those people.
Well.
And how they were removed to the people.
He said more than that even.
Yeah. Which, oh, he said, do not hurt them.
Yeah. He said,
yeah.
Don't hurt them.
Don't hurt anybody. Don't hurt anybody. I forgot. That's right.
That was one of the things the judge said, how you can construe. And it was funny how he said it. If words mean something,
yeah,
then don't hurt them could not reasonably construed into meaning hurt them.
Right.
So it was like he's saying, what is wrong with you idiots? Don't you speak English?
Now, here's the confusion that comes in, right? So you... People are like, what do you mean? It's protected by the First Amendment. He was running for office. We have a right to, as the public, to protest. Okay, here's the distinction you have to know. Primary elections, and I can't seem to say this in such a way that it actually sinks in. Primary elections are not public functions. Primary elections are, and primary campaigns are private, are the mechanism by which private corporate clubs choose the people who will represent them in the general election. We never used to have primary elections. Well, there used to just be a general election. The general election is the public function.
Wouldn't this, from a constitutional perspective, wouldn't this involve a heckler's veto?
Yeah, that's what I mentioned in the beginning. They tried to effectuate the heckler's veto to shut down the speech. But even if this was, but the point is, you don't even get to that because this is not a public function. You had to pay to get in. It's a private venue. It's a party, private corporate club thing. And he's not, let me repeat, he is not president of the United States yet.
But even if it's public, you can't come in where somebody's giving a speech and then try to shut them down and stop them from speaking by your yelling and screaming. Even if it is public, that's a heckler's veto.
Right.
You have your right to protest, but a protest is not silencing someone else's speech.
Right.
That's not legitimate protest.
Well, and that's a good educational point. We'll talk about this when we get through the break.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. This is Chris Ann Hall, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over personality. This is the second half of the Chris Ann Hall Show, our Saturday edition, where we bring to you current events from a constitutional perspective. We are a teach show, not a talk show. We want to educate. We want to empower. We want to equip. You know, there's this saying, I'm with my husband and co-host J.C. Hall, there's this saying, knowledge is power. But knowledge is not power until you activate it.
Yeah.
It's just simply, it doesn't work unless you do something with it. That's why we're here to teach you this. And we're talking about the fact that Donald Trump has won a dismissal of the lawsuit against him over the 2016 rally in Kentucky, where three protesters filed a lawsuit against him claiming inciting to riot. And the circuit court, by a 3-0 vote, said, no, this is not inciting a riot. Number one, Donald Trump did not incite a riot. Number two, Donald Trump went out, at his words actually said, don't hurt anyone. And number three, this is not a First Amendment issue because this is a private venue. And I want us to really, well, they, I want us to get
they
that.
They don't have a First Amendment issue.
Yeah, right. They don't have
the
a First Amendment
issue. The fact of the matter is, it seems to me Donald Trump would have a First Amendment issue. He's the, see, this is what I see happening. As I listen to you, as I have listened to you lay out these constitutional principles over the years,
mm-hmm.
okay, the pattern that seems to be coming forward to me is I'm watching these people, and the attempt is to misdefine protest. That seems to me at the core of it. I saw this in the conversation about the Baltimore riots, right, which you mm-hmm. mentioned several shows ago, and in this. So help me to understand, we'll kind of hit this at the close of the last segment. The people are saying, well, this is just protest. So like you talked about one of the Fox News commentators saying, well, you can't do anything about this. Those people, they were out breaking, you know, destroying property, setting things on fire. And then in this case, you see here and you see on these college campuses so much, these people mm-hmm. show up with their bullhorns and their whistles and mm-hmm. their air horns and yelling and screaming. And essentially, by this commotion and this noise and all their activity, shutting down the speech mm-hmm. of the speaker.
Right.
Okay. And they're calling that protest. So mm-hmm. are these things under the Constitution? Is that protest? If you're destroying property, setting things on fire, and using your actions to shut down the speech of a speaker, is that properly defined as protest?
No, that is not properly defined as protest. If you're being destructive, if you're hurting someone, if you're destroying private property, if you're destroying public property, that is a crime. That is not First Amendment. That is not free speech. And
then if you're doing these things to stop the people from being able to speak,
then it's not. You have once you
is
have,
that also would that also be a crime as far as that
no.
that's a what I'm saying is that a not a crime. I meant what I mean to say is that grounds for the person to have a and by the way, I guess I should add to this where the police do nothing about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they allow these people to do all the screaming and yelling and shutting down the speech of another. Does that person who's speaking then have a claim under the First Amendment when these officers and the people say, let those other people shut them down and do nothing about it and say that's okay? Do they then have a claim?
No, there is no claim. Specifically...
No, I mean the person speaking, because heckler's veto, right? Doesn't the law enforcement have a duty to protect that speaker's right to speak?
Yes.
I mean, isn't that definition of heckler's veto?
Yes, absolutely. And that is settled law that the local police, the local law enforcement have a duty to ensure that someone's right to freedom of speech is not being infringed upon, not just simply by the government, but that's only in a public forum.
Right.
Okay. So only in the public forum. In a
so then
private
that's why the stuff they're doing is not protest.
Right. It's not protest. But it's not protest here, because this is not even a public forum. And that's the point that I want to make sure that we're getting today, because I'm seeing that this is one of the biggest disconnects in understanding freedom of speech and First Amendment. This is a completely private affair. It is a completely private function.
So let me understand.
So you have no right to protest
right.
in a completely private affair.
And then on the other side, the speaker and their staff or whoever have a right to call security on you and throw you out.
Absolutely, because the moment you refuse to abide by the rules of decorum at this point, and you allow and you interrupt the paid speaker, and you interrupt the ability of the people who have paid to hear this speaker, and you refuse to hold your tongue, and you are told to leave and you refuse to leave, at that moment you are trespassing.
I was going to say, so in that case you have disorderly conduct, trespassing, disturbing the peace.
It's not disorderly conduct. It's and it wouldn't be disturbing the peace because again, it's not a public forum.
Uh-huh.
In order for disorderly conduct, in order for disturbing the peace, you've got to be in a public venue. But it is trespassing.
Uh-huh.
So you have been told to leave by the people who effectively own this space.
Yeah.
Because you've paid for it. You've rented it. This is your money. You have been told to leave by the people who effectively own this space for this period of time. Your refusal to leave becomes trespass.
Okay.
So that can be a crime.
Now, would the same be true in like the GOP conventions and these sort of things?
So absolutely, because remember...
Because those are essentially private pay. You have to pay to get in there.
So absolutely. Well, the GOP is a private club.
Right.
And that's the other thing that I just can't seem to maybe say in a way and teach in a way that really sinks in.
Let me ask
you. The political parties are private corporate clubs. They are not government. They are not public. They ought not be funded publicly.
Right. So what about these? What about these colleges? So the let's say you have a public college, but you have
a private college.
For instance, no, I want to deal with public college. So to make this distinction, to try to understand this distinction,
right?
So you have let's say we're at the University of Florida, and the Student Government Association invites some speaker, and they got a speaker in, speaking, and then you have this group of Antifa students or some of these crazies, and start their what they call protest in the middle of this thing, disrupting the speech and all that. What would we have there?
Well, then you have the heckler's veto.
Okay.
Okay. So then, at that point in time, the security has an obligation to protect the staged speaker's speech from disruption, interruption, because the heckler's veto is somebody who, well, everybody understands the word veto. It's no, right? And a heckler is somebody who is trying to drown out the other message. So it is even settled Supreme Court law. It should be settled free speech principle that the community and those in the community have an obligation to secure the rights of the person who is speaking. So there's nothing to stop those Antifa people from protesting outside the venue. Mm-hmm. They can hold their signs, they can rally, they can shout, they can be right at the door if they want to. But they can't stop. It's what Benjamin Franklin wrote.
I have a question about that too.
Yeah. So it's what Benjamin Franklin wrote in 1772, that freedom of speech should have no bounds, only that you cannot harm or hurt another. And this harm is in a sense taking away from that speech. So in your situation, it would be the duty of the security to remove those people. And if they refuse to remove, at that point, once again, trespass comes in. Then you have, because it's a public place, you have disorderly conduct and maybe some other things.
So what if these people, they're outside. What if, as a group of protesters, because I've seen this, you know that you're close enough. Like, you're not in the venue. You're not inside the auditorium. But you're close enough that you know you get so many people and you get so loud that you'll be able to essentially stop the speech because you can drown it out.
Well, that's still another form of the heckler's veto, and it would still be the obligation of the security or local police to tell them you have to move further away. Or a lot of times, it has been held by the courts to be a reasonable restraint on speech to limit the decibel level. So a lot of places will say you can't have a loudspeaker, you can't speak with a bullhorn, that sort of thing.
Because of the heckler's veto, because of you.
And because of disturbing the peace. Yeah. And if you're usually public streets and public forums are public streets and public sidewalks are where free speech is supposed to take place.
Right.
But public streets and public sidewalks are also where people live. It's also where people conduct their businesses and that sort of thing. So it's called a reasonable restraint.
Because you're violating someone else's rights.
Because you're violating someone else's rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Makes
Does
sense.
That help?
Yeah.
I hope that helps everybody else out there, too. Because we have a lot of confusion on this.
Yeah, because you hear a lot of this. You hear people, now I don't know what to call them because they're not protesters. You hear these disruptors, these provocateurs.
Well, they're hecklers.
Saying.
Heckler
yeah,
veto.
Oh, let's call them hecklers. So you hear these hecklers saying, oh, it's my right to protest. I have a right to protest. And so they come back and argue with this notion of protest. So that's why I see the attempt to redefine or at least the misuse of the term protest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think on the one hand, it's because of ignorance. And then on another hand, I think it's intentionally to bully people into a different definition.
Where else in the world can you get a talk show that teaches you about the First Amendment?
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show, and I'll answer that question we left at the break. Nowhere. Nowhere but the Chris Ann Hall Show. This is why we are who we are. This is why we do what we do. You cannot find this anywhere else.
It's good because I think we're really loose in our speech. We're loose in our expression about these things. So I'm going to make sure I start referring to these people as hecklers. They're not protesters.
They're not protesters. And that's what would have been trying to teach for over 8 years now. We've got to understand that how we speak makes a difference.
And it's interesting because you'll see it in the articles, you know, that are reporting on this will say a group of protesters did this and that. When you look at their actions, they don't meet the definition of protest, yet their actions become associated with that label.
Right.
And so it blurs the lines and messes up the understanding from a constitutional perspective what protest really is.
Well, that's this Reuters article that I found about the dismissal of the inciting riot lawsuit. Reuters says, quote, U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday won dismissal of a lawsuit in which three protesters accused him of inciting a riot. We had a private venue. Yeah, we had a private venue with a private group and a privately paid speaker.
Yeah.
And so that is not a protester.
Correct.
That's
a heckler.
Interloper.
Three hecklers.
Yeah, three hecklers.
He won a case against three hecklers, not three protesters.
But you're right. I never really thought about it to that depth. When you call them protesters, then it makes people associate free speech with what they're doing. Maybe that's why I'm fighting this uphill battle, because we don't speak correctly.
No.
These are not protesters. These are hecklers.
Well, and I think some of it's through ignorance and some of it's through intent. There's a manipulation of language that's purposeful, and then there's a misuse of language that's based on ignorance.
Well, I want to. This is an interesting case that I want to talk about today. Next, it melds free speech with the right to keep and bear arms, and It also sort of proves amusingly in my mind that California's been in its progressive slot for a very long time. So, September 11th, a federal judge in Sacramento, according to the Sacramento Bee, a federal judge in Sacramento has overturned a 95-year-old state law that banned firearms dealers from using images of handguns on their storefronts as an advertising to sell their weapons.
I believe this headline should read, better late than never.
Right. Okay, so can you imagine what would happen if California passed a law that said that Burger King could not have put a picture of a burger on their window in order to sell burgers? I mean, I don't understand this. The law blocked dealers from using images, but allowed them to use signs featuring shotguns or rifles, which to me not only is just stupid, but it's confusing. How do you know what's allowed and what's not allowed? You can use a sign, but you can't use an image. You can use shotguns or rifles, but you can't use these guns. You know, okay, Burger King, you can have a picture of a bun, but you can't put the burger in it, and you can have a slice of cheese, but no bacon. You know, I'm just thinking, how is this not crazy?
And California, man.
And the judge who wrote a 15-page, I love this, called it an order, right? They didn't call it a ruling. Praise God. Do you think maybe we're starting to change the way people speak?
Yeah.
The Sacramento Bee says the judge wrote a 15-page order. And I'm excited because he didn't say it was a ruling. That California, quote, may not accomplish its goals by violating the First Amendment. And really, what we're talking about here is what California is trying to do is infringe upon the right to keep and bear arms. That's what they're doing. But in First Amendment law, because that was an area that I practiced for several years. In First Amendment law, when the government makes a law that infringes on speech, it has to be done in such a way that it is not content specific. It has to be what we call content neutral. And when we come back after the break, I'll explain to you in better detail of what that really, really means.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here with my husband and co-host JC Hall, where we are fact, not fiction, truth, not propaganda. We are constitution about current events. And I want to explain to you how this First Amendment / Second Amendment works. This court says it's not a Second Amendment issue, it's a First Amendment issue. And this is where I'll disagree with the court, okay? I will disagree with the court because, look, the controlling issue, yes, may be First Amendment. The controlling issue may be a freedom of speech issue, a place where the government is making a law that is not, and I use this phrase before the break, content neutral. But in fact, it is a right to keep and bear arms issue because the purpose of the law, and I don't think anybody can deny this, the purpose of the law is to limit the people's right, the people's ability to keep and bear arms. And so what we have now is the court saying this is not a content-neutral law. And what that means is if the government is going to create an ordinance that in any way, shape, or form infringes on someone's speech, they must do it in such a way that it doesn't target one ideology, one opinion, one perspective over another. For example, you cannot create a law that says you can have a billboard as long as that billboard doesn't talk about Jesus, right? So if you have a billboard, our county ordinance regulation on billboards says you can have a billboard that's 4 feet by 6 feet, and it can be 75 feet above the ground, and we have all these things, and it cannot deliver a religious message. That law would be a violation because it is not content neutral. You can say, you can have a billboard that's 4 feet by 6 feet. It can be 75 feet up off the ground. It has to be constructed in such a way that it's safe and it doesn't fall over, that it's not sitting in the middle of the street and that sort of thing. Those regulations on how the speech is delivered would be classified as content neutral. But the fact that the city would say there will be no religious message now violates the content neutral, and now it's absolutely unconstitutional. And I say that not only from a national perspective, from a state constitution perspective as well, because state constitutions are practically nearly entirely uniform when it comes to these natural rights issues. So what we have now is is Sacramento, California, overturning this law that has been in place for 95 years. So for 95 years, I wonder, and it doesn't say, I wonder if it's never been challenged before. Why would this law stand for 95 years? Or is this yet another indication of what happens when the Supreme Court begins to change its perspective? Now, after 95 right. years, we have a Supreme Court that they know will not uphold something like this. So the lower courts fall into lockstep, right? Because remember, I've said this before, there is nothing more humiliating, and I don't care what they say, I've worked with judges, there's nothing more humiliating than being overturned, especially overturned by the Supreme Court. If you are a judge, a federal judge, or a U.S. district judge, or a state judge, or whoever, and you are overturned by the Supreme Court of the United States, that's like a peer review saying, you're dumb. You're so dumb, we had to correct you, because these are supposed to be basic principles.
Yeah, well, I think in the, like in the Ninth Circuit, when you have a majority of these lefty loons, then if there's a majority there, they band together and they take it as a mark of pride. They're mm-hmm. so messed up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think on the individual level, as a general rule, you're exactly right. Because people would say, well, why do we see the Ninth Court or Ninth Circuit, a court of appeals, always overturn whatever? It doesn't seem to stop them. And I think that's the explanation. Because you have a group of those loons together that take it as a mark of pride, you know, to be contrary to the Constitution.
You know, gave a lesson yesterday or Thursday at the River School of Government about how Supreme Court justices are appointed. And a lot of people have a lot of misconception. I would say majority of Americans have a misconception on how district court judges are appointed. You know, you say the Ninth Circuit, and they think, well, the Ninth Circuit is what it is because that part of the country is so liberal. And that court is who it is because Obama put most of those people on the bench. But in those two statements are built on false premise to begin with. Number one, the circuit courts don't have to be compiled of judges that come from that geographic area. There is no requirement in the Constitution that the circuit judges come from the area in which they practice. Number two, Obama appointed no one. I'll just say that because I can say that without equivocation, hesitation, or mental reservation. Obama appointed no one. The Constitution of the United States under Article 2 demands that the president nominate, but it is the Senate who appoints. You don't like who's sitting in the Ninth Circuit? You don't point that finger. That's not the president's fault. That's your senator's fault. We need to start putting the responsibility where the responsibility is due. And speaking about responsibility of the courts, I want to play a short video for you. It's a video for us, obviously, but it is an audio for you. And I want to point this out to my husband, JC, because he's going to be able to actually see this. And then I'm this is Ruth Bader Ginsburg giving an interview at George Washington University very recently. And I want you guys, those of you who are listening, I want you to listen to how she responds, not just simply her words, but listen at how she speaks, the cadence of her speech, and how she delivers this. And then JC and I are going to fill in the blanks and tell you what's going on visually. I tweeted, those of you who follow me on Twitter, I tweeted this video out this morning. This is a must-see video. Absolutely must-see video. And if you're not following me on Twitter, you can find me at Chris Ann Hall, KrisAnnehall, at Chris Ann Hall on Twitter. You have to watch this as well as listen. Let me see if I can get this.
That you went through with what's going on today in that process.
The way it was right. The way it is wrong. The atmosphere in 93 was truly bipartisan. The vote on my confirmation was 96-3. Even though I had spent about 10 years of my life litigating cases under the auspices of the ACLU board, ACLU, and I was on the ACLU board and one of their general counsel. My White House handlers asked me questions about my ACLU affiliation. They were very nervous about it. And I said, forget it, just forget it. There's nothing you can do that will lead me to badmouth the ACLU. Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to be as respectful as possible.
I'll say it. She ain't going to last long.
No.
My goodness, she's like death warmed over.
Okay, so here's my point. This woman has no business being a Supreme Court justice sitting on the bench. No business at all.
Well, I was listening.
This is a Supreme Court. This is not a retirement home.
Yeah.
This is the highest court of the federal government. And I'm trying to be respectful here.
I don't think her mind seems significantly diminished, but...
Are you kidding me? She was not even... You couldn't even tell if she was awake. Did you see how long it took her to answer?
I did kind of notice when he asked. And if you're looking at the video, honestly, and again, like you said, want to be respectful, but he asked the question, and then she's not moving, her head's hanging. I thought, oh man, did she die?
Did
she die here? Because I didn't know what you were showing us. I thought, oh my goodness, did she die?
The whole time she's speaking, she can barely move. She's sitting in the chair. Her chin is most literally leaning against her chest. She can barely lift her head off her chest.
Wow.
Thank her for her service. And help her go home.
Man.
This is the highest court of the federal government. There ought to be a standard here. And I'm not one that's going to push for term limits for a Supreme Court justice. I'm going to push for impeachment when it's appropriate. But for goodness sakes here, people, let's be reasonable.
I can see the headline. Chris Ann calls for death panels for the Supreme Court.
Oh, right. No way. I don't have to call for a death panel. The woman is practically the death panel already.
She is not going to be there much longer. You know, having pastored and been around death, you know, you can kind of look and see there's a point where the vitality starts to leave a person, and they're not far from leaving this world. And that's what it struck me, looking at her and listening to her, man.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show, our last segment of this wonderful Saturday show, Constitution and Principle and Party. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm telling you, you've got to go find me on Twitter. If you're not finding me on Twitter, you have to go and find this video. I looked for it at other places this morning when I was doing the research for the show, and I couldn't find it. I didn't have a lot of time, so maybe you will. But it is on Twitter.
Maybe they don't want her seen like, they don't want this widely published to
maybe
be seen like this,
because this is I'm sorry, JC, when I saw this was disturbing to me. Is this disturbing to you? I mean, this is disturbing to me from a humanity perspective, because my heart breaks for her. It really does. In spite of her ideologies, the woman did amazing things, right? We don't agree ideologically speaking. I don't agree with her premise of activism as a Supreme Court justice. We will never agree on some things, on many, many things. But my heart breaks for her because of this condition that she's in, and for whatever reason, whether it be pride, whether it be politics, they will not let this woman rest.
I don't know. I mean, you want to be doing what you love, you know, till the day you die. I mean, that's a lot of people's perspective. So there she is. Didn't you say she set a date for when she would retire?
5 years from now.
Yeah, that's said. Not happening.
5 years
There's
from now.
No way. There's no way. 5 years?
The woman
no,
has,
this lady doesn't
it's like
have
you
five
said,
years.
She has no vitality in her. She can't even, I'm surprised she's not on life support.
I hate to talk about somebody like this, but I'd be shocked if she made it through Donald Trump's term. I mean, maybe people are going to get mad at us for talking like this, but it's disturbing in that sense. Like, wow.
Like I said, if this was your grandma, you'd be like, oh my goodness, leave her alone.
Yeah. Wow.
It's terrible.
She looks bad, man.
She does. She looks really bad. Bless her heart. I don't mean that in a sort of, you know, condescending way. I mean that most seriously. Bless her heart, because it's just, and this is my point. And
hey,
I'm
props
doing
to
this
her, man. She's yeah. given her last. I mean, she's yeah. given it all to the very end.
But this is a problem. This is why I say thank God there are 9 justices on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It's not just a single justice. Thank God it's not just 3. I'm going to say there's 9, because I'm telling you, I'm looking at this woman and she is not actively contributing to what's going on there at the Supreme Court.
It makes me think she's probably, which they probably dictate to people anyway.
Yeah.
But she would have a hard time even doing that at
yeah.
this point, it seems
she
to
can't
me.
Even
I mean, it would take a good while.
Yeah. And she appears to be, like you said, when she when the wheels start turning.
Yeah.
She's sharp, but you have to wonder at this point. I mean, just looking at her, what is missing? This is just a 2-minute
yeah,
clip.
I don't know. Yeah. And it's hard to say, but definitely any objective person would be like, wow, that's.
I've said for
poor,
a long
poor
time.
Lady.
Yeah. I've said for a long time that she's not, there's no way she's typing and writing.
No.
She has an aide that is doing this for her.
Definitely.
And I wouldn't be surprised if she has an aide that someone has deemed trustworthy that is actually writing the text of the opinions at this point. Somebody who has been a student of her cases for a very long time.
She's got to have help doing everything, it seems
yeah.
to me, when you see her there.
I would like to hold your head up? I would like to see how she got in the chair.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see the video of how she walked there, because seeing her sitting there, you don't even think she's ambulatory at this point.
No, it's astounding. It's strange, actually.
And the other thing that I just wanted to comment on is this Ruth Bader Ginsburg worship that we have going on that's just stunning to me. The woman says, "The way it was right.
The way
it
is.
is wrong.
Yay!
Yay!
Some Yoda thing.
I know,
like,
right? That's what she's like, a Yoda. She's like a Yoda. Now, that might be a little bit disrespectful. The way it was,
yeah, but what is
was
that?
Wrong.
What does that mean?
The way it is wrong.
That sounds like a fortune cookie.
I know, right? So that was just simply the other point that I want to make. You know, I'm highly irritated at this RBG workup stuff.
I want that T-shirt.
You want the T-shirt? The way it was right. The way it is wrong. The notorious RBG. Well, God bless you guys. Thank you for joining us again for another fantastic Saturday. Don't forget to listen in during the week, Monday through Thursday, for the Daily Journal. God bless. We'll see you on Monday.
I received. Let me know.